welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio, brought to you by OU Israel. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and the show is for Shabbat Parshat Yitro. Today, recording and first broadcast, is Yom Chamishi B'Shabbat Parshat Yitro. It is Kaf Shvat 5767, February 8th, 07 on the secular calendar. I would like to repeat something I don't say every week, and that is that Torah Tidbits Audio has been broadcast over Arutz Sheva's Israel National Radio for about 9 years. I should qualify that. The first major portion of that was on Arutz Sheva Radio itself. Then, for a period of time, it was also on Internet Radio. Then when Arutz Sheva went off the air, it was only on internet radio, as it continues to this day, at www.israelnationalradio.com. About a year and a half ago, it was also broadcast on OU Radio. That's www.ouradio.org. And it is not exactly the same show. As I've said many times, the Israel National Radio version of Torah Tidbits Audio is made up of two 23-minute halves, combined in their archive to a 46-minute show. On OU Radio, I have a chance to finish things that I left hanging, add a song or two, say some more things that I didn't get to at all, and the show is often longer than the 46 minutes. That's pretty much the story. If you would like to make any comments about the show or any suggestions, or just drop us a line that you're listening from any far-flung place or nearby, you can email me at ttatorahtidbitsaudio@ouisrael.org. Again, tta@ouisrael.org, and we'll see where that goes. Apropos that, I made an offer a couple of weeks ago about announcing birthdays on the air. I got one request which I didn't fulfill, and I'll have to look it up and give a belated birthday to that party. I think it was a faithful listener known affectionately as IP, but I will check the email. I am remiss with that, but we'll get it if it becomes a feature. Anyway, let us proceed with Tehillim Kuf Lamed Psalm 130, a prayer to God to answer our prayers in times of troubles, and concluding with Achenu, a particular prayer to help out our fellows who are in trouble wherever they may be. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim karaticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli tihiena aznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmor yah Adonai miya amod, ki imacha haslicha l'ma'an tivarei. Ki viti Adonai kivita nafshi v'lidvaro ho'cholti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim l'boker, shomerim l'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai ha-chesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achinu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim batzara uvashivya ha-omidim bein bayam uvein bayabasha. Hamakom irachem aleihem v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha u'meafela l'ora u'mishibud l'geula hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. I have not been able to, I shouldn't say not been able, I haven't been putting in too many songs of late, spending all of the time talking. I don't mind doing that, but I do want to share some songs with you. It's a different way of taking a look at the upcoming week, cetera, or whatever. And there is an album called Chaim Yisrael, or by Chaim Yisrael, called Ikvot Bachol, Footsteps in the Sand, Footprints in the Sand. The track that I would like to play for you is called Kabedat Avicha, Honor Your Father and Mother, which of course comes from this week's Sedra of Yitro. And the words are not only the words from the fifth commandment of the ten, but they're beautifully written ode to parents, poem to parents. I'll just give you a little bit of an idea if you're not following the Hebrew of the words or you can't make them out. Ata nolad la'olam kemo melech. You were born to this world like a king. They, referring to your parents, do everything for you. They worry about you. They spoil you. And you are the greatest in their eyes and for them. They worry for you without any hesitation, and they prepare things for you and prepare you to face life. Kabedet avicha v'imecha, honor your father and your mother, kol yemei chayecha, all the days of your life. Listen to them, accept their advice, v'tavo brahabracha alecha, and a blessing will come to you. Chaim Yisrael with Kabedet avicha.
אתה נולד לעולם כמו מלך, הם עושים בשבילך הכל, דואגים לך, מפנקים אותך, בשבילם אתה הכי גדול. הם דואגים לך ללא הרף, מכינים אותך לחיים, מלמדים אותך דרך ארץ, שתהיה ילד טוב להורים. כבד את אביך ואימך כל ימי חייך, שמע בקולם, קבל עצתם ותבוא הברכה עליך. כבד את אביך ואימך, הסב נחת להוריך, אבא ואמא בזכותם אתה קיים, אין כמו בעולם. אתה מזמן כבר אולי לא ילד, והוריך מתבגרים, אל תשכח אותם כל ימיך, זכור להם חסד נעורים, תהיה גאה בהם ממוריך, גיבורי החיים שלך, יקרים לך מכל ערך, מלווים הם תמיד אותך. כבד את אביך ואימך כל ימי חייך, שמע בקולם, קבל עצתם ותבוא הברכה עליך. כבד את אביך ואימך, הסב נחת להוריך, אבא ואמא בזכותם אתה קיים, אין כמוהם בעולם. כבד את אביך ואמך בקולם, קבל עצתם ותבוא הברכה עליך. קבל את אביך ואמך, שם נחת להוריך, אבא ואמא בזכותם אתה קיים, אין כמוהם בעולם.
I wanted to talk about the Aseret HaDibrot from the following angle. As a mashal, picture an organization, let's say a shul, that has a very prominent member who is the biggest contributor,
the founder, let's say, of the shul. The analogy I'm just working up as I speak, so it might not fit perfectly. So always be liberal when you follow an analogy. We're talking about the individual who founded the shul, is a major contributor, is very active on the board, etc., etc. There's a point where members of the shul might begin to feel as if they are nothing, because this one guy is doing everything. They needed a certain amount of money for a new Aron Kodesh, a new Sefer Torah, whatever. The guy gave it. Rather than him saying, tell you what, I'll go you 50-50. Membership raises half the amount. I'll match it and give the other half. Then a member of the shul says, look, I'm not as wealthy as this guy, but I contributed to that Sefer Torah also. I got my X number of dollars out of it, and I feel part of it. Now, again, I warn you in advance, the mushel might not hold all the way through, but what I'm talking about is the history of the attitude on the part of people, including Jews, divide them into knowledgeable Jews and not so knowledgeable Jews, and non-Jews, towards the Big Ten, the Aseret HaDvarim, the Aseret HaDibrot, the Ten Commandments. And there is an aura that exists with the Ten Commandments, not only due to Cecil B. DeMille, but it exists because of the Torah itself. When the Torah describes in this week's Parsha, Matan Torah, you feel the spotlight on the Aseret HaDibrot almost to the exclusion of everything else in the Torah, and you have to be reminded repeatedly that Moshe Kibel Torah Mi-Sinai, he got the whole thing at Sinai, and not just the Aseret HaDibrot. But the Ten Commandments, like this rich guy in shul, sometimes in our perception of him, of it, is that it's more than it really is. And that's why in history, Jewish history, you find some of the following. A suggestion, I don't know when this was, how far back it goes, to include the Aseret HaDibrot into the daily davening. Like we have Shema and its other paragraphs in Shema, in the davening, like we have the Song of the Sea, Oz Yashir Moshe, in davening, there was a suggestion, a serious suggestion, that the Aseret HaDibrot belonged there. And they do. But it was rejected. It was rejected not to allow the wrong impression that the Ten Commandments was the sum total of God's revelation at Sinai, and that the rest of the Torah is commentary to it, written by human beings. This is a perception that many people have, non-Jews as well as Jews. Do you keep all of the Torah? Well, not all of the Torah, the Ten Commandments. Which, of course, you can't, because when you challenge that person, it says, that means Shabbat also. Not all of the Ten Commandments, but most of the Ten Commandments. You know, I honor my father and my mother, and I don't do idolatry, and I don't murder, you know, etc., etc. There's that aura. The aura shows up in many legislation throughout the generations, or maybe not official legislation, but certainly preferences to downplay the Aseret HaDibrot. Not only wasn't it allowed to be part of the davening, to close the mouth, this is the expression, to close the mouth of the apostate who would say, that's all that we got from God. But there was a period in history where the Ten Commandments, the Luchot, the Aseret HaDibrot, were not used as synagogue decoration. not on the walls, not on the benches, not on the curtains. Today you see it all over the place. But what I try to do, even in the graphics that I write, is always have the Aserta Dibrot superimposed on a full Sefer Torah on the mountain to remind people that it was the whole Torah that was gotten there, and the Aserta Dibrot were a down payment. The fact of the matter is, though, they are special. They were written by the hand of God first, then on Moshe's hewn stone the second time, as a physical, concrete, almost pun intended there, written in stone, that's the expression. I am sure that's where the expression comes from, or, you know, certainly the idea is there. Written in stone, the rest of the Torah was totally oral for 40 years of wandering. Even what we call the Torah Shebichtav, the written Torah, was not in writing until the end of the 40 years. So what Moshe Rabbeinu was able to say to the people when he was teaching them is the Aseret HaDibrot, or the Shtei Luchot, contain the command, Lo Tignov, thou shalt not steal. The Torah, which God revealed to me on 40 days and 40 nights on Sinai following the day of Matan Torah, will contain in writing many of the details of thou shalt not steal. The Torah says elsewhere, Lo Tignovu, not Lo Tignov, Lo Tignovu, that's not just the plural version of Lo Tignov. It has a different meaning. If you look in Sefer Achinuch or other treatment of the 613 mitzvot, you'll see that the primary Lo Tignov in the Aseret HaDibrot is defined as the prohibition against kidnapping, stealing a person, either for selling him as a slave or for some other reason. And that's a capital offense if the person is either sold or killed. And Lo Tignovu refers to stealing money. Lo Tigzol is not to rob, which is a form of stealing, or vice versa. Let's put it differently. There are at least 19 prohibitions in the Torah that if you wanted to subsume them under a category, they would be subsumed under the category of Lo Tignov. In fact, that's the dual picture that people have of the Aseret HaDibrot. Each one of the Dibrot, each one of the commandments in the Aseret HaDibrot, is a specific mitzvah, either a positive mitzvah or a prohibition, or in the case of commandment number 4, both. In the case of commandment number 2, against idolatry, there are 4 prohibitions contained within it. Not just don't believe in other gods, but don't make idols to other gods, and don't bow to other gods, and don't worship other gods. And those are all 4 separate prohibitions. But there are dozens of more prohibitions that are subsumed under the categories presented in commandment number 2. When the Torah speaks of not making an Asherah. An Asherah is a tree that was worshipped by certain cults. That's not mentioned specifically in the Aseret HaDibrot, and when it's mentioned in the Torah, it's counted as a separate mitzvah. And a whole bunch of other things which are considered the accoutrements of Avodah Zarah, or actual Avodah Zarah, like eating food or drinking wine that was consecrated to an idolatry. That's one of the details of idolatry, but it counts as its own separate mitzvah among the 613. So then you go back and you say, alright, how do I look at the Aseret HaDibrot? You have to look at it at least 2 ways. You have to look at it as the down payment of a collection of specific mitzvot, and as chapter headings for the rest of the Torah. So when it says in the Aseret HaDibrot, v'lo ta'avdeim, and not to worship them, meaning other gods. But later in the Torah, it mentions the prohibition, as I said, of drinking consecrated wine. Then that is not just a detail of worshiping idols. It's its own mitzvah among Taryag, but it is definitely to be linked by a red line or a dotted line or however you want to do your chart, let's say, to that particular part of the Aseret HaDibrot. I would even suggest that the Chagim, which are not mentioned at all in the Aseret HaDibrot, are connected to Shabbat because they too are called Kodesh. In fact, just as a side point, you've got a sequence where the first presentation of Yom Tov, you don't really know immediately that it's any different from Shabbat. It is Mikra Kodesh, and it says there you're not allowed to do Malacha, and you say, oh, just like Shabbos. But then it says, Ach Asher Yeochel L'chol Nefesh, only that which is needed for preparation of food, and you know that that's qualified in many details, that makes the list of malachot on Yom Tov different from the malachot of Shabbat. But when it says in the Aseret HaDibrot, lo ta'aseh kol malacha, you can see, again, if you don't want to make it a solid line connection, you want to make it a dotted line connection and put a code on the bottom of the page explaining what the dotted line means, it's still there. So many, many mitzvot of the Torah, people say all of them. I don't know how you could connect certain things like that, although you probably with a drash could fetch everything into it. But that's the point. Now, I started by saying that the Aseret HaDibrot was over-venerated, and therefore Chazal had to downplay it. The present-day issue of that is coming up this Shabbat again, and that is the time-honored custom, the widespread custom, of standing for the reading of the Aseret HaDibrot. You look in the sources, and it is definitely not a proper thing to do. Clarify that, because it gives the wrong impression of the role of the Aseret HaDibrot vis-a-vis the rest of the Torah.
Obviously, we'll have more to say about that, but let's take a musical interlude for a song from one of the Zmirot of Shabbat, which will point to the event, the great event of revelation at Sinai in this week's Parsha. You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio for Parshat Yitro. We're about to play a song from an album called Shachar, the track Yom Shabbaton, Yom Shabboson, one of the Zmirot of Shabbat Day, but one particularly that keeps pointing to the revelation at Sinai, the Aseret HaDibrot, specifically the fourth commandment of Zachorot Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho, and throughout some of the stanzas are references to that very event. Therefore, in honor of Shabbat, which much of our music is, and specifically Shabbat Parshat Yitro, I present you Binyamin Sofer, Shlomi Rein, Yitzi Kagan, or some of them, or all of them, with Yom Shabbaton.
Savannah, Lucas, Savannah, Meravine, Viamit Koyak,
Let's get back to the topic.
If you have to stand for the Aseret HaDibrot, but not for the rest of the Torah reading, then obviously there's a difference in Kedusha between them, which Chazal said, no, don't think that. Either stand for Kriyas HaTorah, which I do, not because of that, but I have no problem, because I'm standing for the whole Torah reading, or stand for the Torah reading at least of Parshat Yitro, or stand at least for the Aliyah that contains the Aseret HaDibrot, and there they actually suggest the following. Usually the rabbi of the shul is honored by that Aliyah. So he's called to the Torah, Yamod, Harav, Moreno, Harav, blah, 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 and he comes up. So you stand out of respect to the rabbi. Remain standing. Listen to the Aliyah, which includes the Aseret HaDibrot. Let him make his brachot, and then sit down. And then, you didn't stand just for the Aseret HaDibrot. You were standing for the whole Aliyah that contained it, and you stood out of respect for the Ruchin. Now, I mentioned that Rav Ovadia Yosef was viciously opposed to it. He speaks of it in very harif terms, very strong terms. But I found another Sephardi posek who tempered it in a very nice way. I'm referring to Rav Chaim David Halevi, Zichrono Livracha, who was the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv Yafo, before Rabbi Lau, and after Rabbi Lau, and on the Sephardi side anyway of Rabbi Lau, who has a set of Shelot and Tshuvot just a little bit about Rav Chaim David Halevi. He wrote a Shulchan Aruch called Mekor Chaim, The Source of Life. It is a beautiful piece of work. My favorite aspect of it, besides its crystal clarity, is the fact that each section of halacha is introduced by a nice little words of introduction before he gets into the details of the dinim as Shulchan Aruch does. And most appreciated is his repeated reference to what I just said is what we do, but Achenu B'nai Ashkenaz, our Ashkenazi brothers, do this, don't agree, do that, or whatever. So it becomes a little bit more universal than a pure Sephardi source would be for us. It was, he kitzurized it into a kitzur Shulchan Aruch Mekor Chaim, and that kitzur Shulchan Aruch of his is used as the basic halachic text in many, many schools in this country, including many Ashkenazi schools. Above the regular Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, which was popular, or the Chaye Yodam, and it's used, and it's a beautiful piece of work. In addition, during his tenure as chief rabbi in Tel Aviv, he had a radio show called Asei Lecha Rav, Make Yourself for Yourself a Rabbi, where people would phone in questions and he would answer them. And he collected the best of the tshuvot in the course of a year and published a volume of Asei Lecha Rav in print. I have the 9 volumes that exist. I don't think there are any more. And I find them beautifully done. First of all, many of them are short. And if you don't want to plow through a long tshuva, it's a nice thing to get a quick thing. But there, too, he expresses a sensitivity about the process of being a posek and the way he answers many questions. Emir Tzashem, sometimes we will feature some of them and I'll share them with you. But just to give you a couple of examples, he was asked by a... let's not get into that. That'll take us too far afield. He was asked about by a Sephardi rabbi, a young fellow who had just finished, just got his smicha, who was becoming the rav of a Sephardi shul. I think his own Sephardi shul that he was returning to after years in yeshiva. The yeshiva he went to was an Ashkenazi yeshiva. This is a Sephardi rav, but he went to an Ashkenazi yeshiva. And he picked up some of the Ashkenazi minhagim, including standing for Kriyas HaTorah. Sephardim do not stand for Kriyas HaTorah. And he asks Rav Chaim David Halevi, I will be becoming the Rav of this Kehila. Should I continue my minhag of standing for Kriyas HaTorah? Or should I revert to the Sephardi minhag of not standing so as not to confuse the congregation? Even if he'll get up and say, you all can sit, but I have a custom of standing, he felt it might be confusing to the people, which he's right. Rav Chaim David Halevi responded in the following way. First of all, by the way you ask the question, you seem to imply that you think that it is okay to sit for Torah reading, but it is universally held that it is preferable and noteworthy and praiseworthy to stand. He says, it's not so, you should know. The Ashkenazi view is, you don't have to stand, but kol hakavod if you do, because it simulates standing at Har Sinai to receive the Torah fresh today, as if you were there at the time, or as if today it was given. But you should know there's another side of the coin, mostly from the Arizal, which is very heavy into Sephardi practice, vice versa, of course, and Hasidim as well, to dafka, sit, for Kriyas HaTorah, specifically. Not like most Ashkenazim, they sit for laning, but not because that's their minhag. They just don't have a minhag to stand. You don't have a minhag to stand, so you sit. Sephardim, dafka sit. Yekis, dafka sit. I davened in a Yeki shul in Manhattan once, a long time ago. after the first Aliyah, when I was standing, as I have been doing since I'm 12 years old, thanks to the influence of my Rebbe, Rabbi Chaim Siegel, Zichron Olam Bracha. And I don't complain about it all these years. It's a fine minhug. I stood for the first Aliyah. Gabbai came over to me right after the first Aliyah. He certainly would not have come over to me during the Aliyah because decorum is decorum. And he said the custom in the shul is to sit for Torah reading. And I did. Because when in Kurdistan, there was a Kurdistan, as the old saying goes. But the point is that his first part of the answer was, don't think that everybody thinks it's the more important thing to do or the more special thing to do. Sitting is important also, especially for a Sephardi. Second, true, he writes, I agree that one should not highlight the Aseret HaDibrot overly by standing for the reading, but it is a custom that not only is out there, it is widespread, almost universal, generation after generation, and not just ignorant people, but serious Talmidei Chachamim and Rabbanim have stood and do stand for the Aseret HaDibrot. So he says, I, who am I to say they're all wrong? Obviously, there's something to it. And he spends a paragraph saying there is something to it. After all, the Aseret HaDibrot was what the people heard from God's mouth at Revelation at Sinai. The rest of the Torah was equally God-given, but to Moshe during those 40 days and 40 nights, and he transmitted it to the people, and it was written down in the Torah, etc. So, on the one hand, it deserves the respect it gets. On the other hand, he says, I reiterate, that you shouldn't do it. In other words, he puts it like this. If you came to me and said, I am going to be the Rav of a brand new community in a brand new city, and we have and the people are all, I'm exaggerating this now, are all converts in Balei Tshuva, none of whom ever heard of any minhag any place, and you were creating a body of minhagim, I would then say, you shouldn't stand for the Aseret HaDibrot. But you don't uproot a tradition, a minhag, that is based on a good thing. If it's a stupid thing that it's based on, which it's not, then you could say it's a minhag stup, it's a silly, frivolous minhag, and I wouldn't give it any credence. But this is not a frivolous thing. People stand out of respect to what deserves the respect. There's just the fear that they'll overdo it, and this is a way of cutting it down to size a little bit. So that was, to me, a much more tempered tshuva, where, you know, he came out with it that way. There's one more thing that I want to throw into the pot here, and that is the way we read it. The world, as you know, if you've read it other places or in Torah Tidbits, if not other places, the Aseret HaDibrot in both Yitro and in Vo'at Hanan have two sets of Torah notes, two sets of trup. Everything else has one set. Aseret HaDibrot has two sets. Early Chumashim used to print them both, superimposed one on the other, and it made it almost impossible to read in either way. But most Chumashim today will print it in the flow of the text one way, and in the back of the book of Shemot, or in the bottom of the line, will say, and this is the Aseret HaDibrot with the set of Torah notes. The notes are called Ta'amei Elyon, upper notes, because most of them are the more dramatic notes that are written above the words, as opposed to Ta'amei HaTachton, the lower notes, because most of those, not all, are written under the words. More than the position of those notes is the way they sound. I'll give you an example in a moment. More than that is how the Aseret HaDibrot are presented. For what I mean by that is like this. Chapter 20, Perak Chaf, in Shmot, consists of 22 psukim. The first pasuk is considered the introduction to the Aseret HaDibrot. Vayedaber Elokim et kol hadvarim ho'ela leimor, and God spoke all of the following things, saying, and then you get Anochi Hashem Elokecha, etc., etc. The part which we call the Ten Commandments or the Aseret HaDibrot spans 13 psukim. Not 10 verses, 13 verses. I like to say that to people because already we begin to diffuse the focus on 10 commandments. It's 10 commandments contained in 13 psukim. Second, the number of mitzvot out of 613 from the 10 commandments is 14. I mentioned before, there's two in the Shabbat commandment, Zachor and Lo Ta'aseh Kol Melacha. There are four in the second commandment, so that's where you get your extra three. Three more here, one more there is 14. In the second version of the Aseret HaDibrot in Vo'at Chanan, there's a 15th mitzvah called Lo Titaveh. It's different from thou shalt not covet, it's thou shalt not lust after, and there's a technical distinction, and it's another mitzvah. So what do you have so far? The Ten Commandments are 13 psukim, which contain 14 plus 1, 15 mitzvot. More than that is the fact that there is no direct match between a commandment and a pasuk. For example, fourth commandment is, in the very prose way of reading it, Zachor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho, verse. Sheshet Yamim Ta'avod V'yasita Kol Melachtecha, verse. V'yom HaShvi'i Shabbat L'Adonai Elohecha Lo Saseh Kol Melacha Ata Uvincha Uvitecha Avdecha Avamadcha Uvehemtecha V'gerecha Asher B'sharecha. Pasuk. Next pasuk. Ki sheshes yamim. Pardon me for going between Ashkenazis and Sephardic pronunciation. That's a hazard of my upbringing and training. Ki sheshet yamim. Asa Adonai et hashamayim vet haaretz. Et hayom vet kol hashabam vayonach bayom hashvi al kein. Beirach Adonai et yom hashabat vayikadshehu. Pasuk, 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 pasuk. Here's another pasuk. Lo tirzach, lo tinaf, lo tignov, lo taneh bereyacha, ein shaker. That was four commandments in one pasuk. Thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not steal or kidnap, thou shalt not bear false witness. When you read that in Tame HaTachton, it's four commandments in a pasuk. Pasuk, 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 the 13 psukim are all psukim. And in that way, they fit very well with all of the Torah. That's how you read the whole Torah. The Tame HaElyon brings the spotlight to the Aseret HaDibrot. Let me see if I can find it here. It should be in the back of the Chumash. There it is. And I don't know if I'll do justice to it. Zachor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho Sheshet Yomim Tavod V'yasita Kol Melachtecha V'yom HaShvi'i Shabbat L'Adonai Elohecha Lo Ta'aseh Kol Melacha Ata Uvincha Uvitecha Avdecha V'amatecha Uvhemtecha V'gerecha Asher Bisharecha Ki Sheshet Yomim Asa Adonai Et HaShemayim Vet Haaretz Et Hayom Vet Kol HaShabam Vayonach Bayom HaShvi'i Al Kein Beirach Adonai Et Yom HaShabbat Vayikadshehu. I don't know how to end it. There's a way of dramatically flaring the end. The point is, that was all one pasuk. It was all read as one pasuk, corresponding to the Aseret HaDibrot. You could see it more in the 4-in-1. Lo tirzach, lo tinaf, lo tignov, lo taneh bereyacha, ein shaker. Each one, again, I didn't do it well, focusing as a dibra. Now, officially, Tame HaElyon, the dramatic drum roll reading with the different dibrot standing out on their own, is is read when you read it in public. The prosaic Tamei HaTachton, Pasuk by Pasuk, is for private reading. If you were leaning for yourself to go over the Sedra, you would use Tamei HaTachton. Therefore, that's the traditional. Therefore, the standard minhag all over the world in Jewish communities and in many places in Israel is to read it on Yitro and in Vort Chanan and the other time of year we read it, which is Shavuot morning in Tamei HaElyon. Minhag Yerushalayim, based on the teaching of the Vilna Gaon, the minhag that personally I follow, the minhag that the shul at the Israel Center follows, much anyway, is to read it Tamei HaTachton, except on Shavuot morning. Shavuot morning, when you're reliving, reenacting Ma'amad Har Sinai, it gets the drum roll in the fancier trup. But I like the idea. It appeals to me that in Parshat Yitro, it fits together with the flow of the whole Sedra and of the whole Torah. That gives it a balance of, yes, it's important and special. No, it's not as important and special as that guy thinks it is and that other person thinks it is. And you get a happy balance.
And that's about it for this issue of Torah Tidbits Audio, leaving me exactly enough time to wish you a Shabbat Shalom and say Lehishtameah. Okay, Torah Tidbits Audio listeners on OU Radio, you know that when I say Lehishtameah, often, I was going to say usually, I don't know, but often, it is meant for the listeners on Arut Sheva, on Israel National Radio, because after that, there is some extra material which goes for the OU website only. And it's a simple matter of time constraints that I'm given to by Israel National Radio and almost unlimited, not quite, time frame in, or no time frame in OU Radio. In any event, I would like to share a few more things from the Seder with the listeners, and I would like to start with another song about Kabed et Avicha v'Etimecha. This one is by Michael and David Streicher. They have an album with a lot of father-son kind of music, not just your run-of-the-mill duo, but these are songs that are perfect for father and son. No better choice than the song Kabed.
Kabe, 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 k
One comment about the mitzvah of Kabedet Avicha Vetimecha, honor thy father and thy mother, its partner mitzvah, Ish Imo V'Aviv Tira'u, a person must revere his mother and his father. And especially based on the words of the first song earlier in the show that we had, Kabedet Avicha, where it speaks of you are born into the world as a king and they do everything for you and they spoil you and they worry about you and they prepare you for life. A sad question, but we have to mention it. What happens if they don't? What happens if you don't have loving parents? Do you still have, and I won't say more, but there's a lot more than that, do you still have an obligation called Kabedet Avicha V'et Imecha, honor thy father and thy mother? The answer is yes. And it's the hardest aspect of this question, because, let's face it, if a person has loving and caring parents, it is the most natural thing in the world for a child to honor them and respect them, and almost to the point where one would say, why did the Torah even have to command me to do this? And part of the answer is that the mitzvah is not dependent nor proportional to the care that the parents show, to the quality of their parenting. Sad as it is to say, a child, by virtue of the fact that this man and this woman brought him into life, even if it was an accident, even if they didn't want a child, even if they didn't care, even if they were abusive, whatever, there is still an absolute, bad word probably, but there is still a level of requirement when it comes to the mitzvot of Kibbud Av V'Em and of Yirah, especially the reverence. And it has to do with the fact that there are three partners to a person's life. God is one of them and his parents are the other. And it is not a command to honor one's parents in appreciation of the fact that they diapered him when he was needed diapering and fed him when he was hungry and clothed him and all of those other things. That's what gets the love and that's what gets the extra measure of everything. But it is a requirement, a bite-the-bullet requirement. And I certainly don't wish it on anybody, but a child with parents who, for one reason or another, are difficult to honor and difficult to respect, a child has to do some serious, serious soul-searching to determine how best to avoid situations of conflict and confrontation, because the bottom line is we're still talking about one's parents. I think enough said on that, maybe too much, but I wanted to get that point made. And happy is the person with a good relationship with his parents and good relationship with his children, and it's probably the most wonderful thing you could bless anybody and wish on anybody, that there should be good relations all around. So let's leave it at that. I want to take a look at another angle from Parshat Yitro. Let us, for the moment, remove from the Torah, chas v'chalila, God forbid, but just for the sake of this point, let's take out Perek Yud Chet, chapter 18 of the book of Shemot, Exodus. Leave it out completely. This is what we would have. From the beginning of the book, the family of Yaakov is down in Egypt. They are enslaved. They grow to a multitude. Many years later, God decides to take them out of Egypt. He appears to Moshe Rabbeinu. A lot more happens, obviously, but this is all that I'm mentioning. And plagues are brought on the Egyptians, and the people are taken out of Egypt, and then they cross the sea. And in the aftermath of their having crossed the sea successfully, they have a few things at the end of Parshat Beshalach. They begin to receive the mun. And at the very end of Beshalach, Amalek, the nation of Amalek, attacks the Jews, and Yehoshua is commanded to gather an army and fight against them. They repel the attack of Amalek, but do not vanquish them. And God tells us that this will be a perennial battle between Amalek and God, and between Amalek and the people of Israel. Now we're continuing to this week's Torah reading, but remember, we're pulling out Perek Yud Chet, following the episodes in the aftermath of the splitting of the sea. We next read in the third month that Bnei Israel was out of Egypt. They came to the Sinai Desert, and they went from Rephidim, which was the location of the battle against Amalek, and they came to Midbar Sinai, and they camped opposite the mount, and they were told to prepare there to receive God's word, the Torah, on Mount Sinai. The Torah then continues with the episode of Revelation at Sinai, the Ten Commandments, Aseret HaDibrot, etc., etc. And it begins, it ends the Parsha, V'chol ha'am ru'im et ha'kolot v'et ha'lapidim, all of the people saw and heard the sounds and everything like that. And it was an awe-inspiring experience. It was a frightful experience, a terrifying experience. The people came to Moshe and said, enough, we don't want to hear God's voice anymore. And God said, okay, make you a deal. You have to listen to the prophets. This is elsewhere in the Torah as well. And I will speak to them and transmit through them my word to you, but you have to keep the Torah and be faithful, etc., etc. So ends Parshat Yitro. Now, in Perek Kaf Aleph, chapter 21 in Shemot, Exodus, before the Ela HaMishpatim Asher Tasim Lifneihem, and these are the statutes which you shall place before the people, let's take our hypothetically removed chapter 18 and put it in there. Excuse me. And this is how it reads. And Yitro, Kohen Midyan, father-in-law of Moshe, heard all of the things that happened, that God did to Moshe and to Israel, his people, that he took them out of Egypt. We add to that what the commentaries point out, the battle against Amalek, and we could add what some of the commentaries say, Matan Torah, revelation at Sinai. Yitro heard about all of these things, and he takes Tzipora and her two sons, Gershom and Eliezer, and brings them to Moshe, who is camped somewhere near Mount Sinai after revelation at Sinai. Many of the commentaries say that's when this happened, that he, Yitro, was not there before. In other words, sequentially, at the beginning of Yitro, we are poised between the splitting of the sea and the battle of Amalek just having happened, and the upcoming revelation at Sinai, Matan Torah, the receiving of the Torah, about to happen. And that's when the Torah has chapter 18 about Yitro's arrival. If it is so that this is out of chronological sequence, then in our hypothetical playing around here, we are actually removing it from its position as chapter 18. You notice that it was not at all missed from the flow of Beshalach through the end of Beshalach into Bachodesh HaShlishi in the third month after the Exodus. It flows very, very nicely because that's where the story is picked up as they traveled from Rephidim to Sinai. And now, at the end, after the end of Parshat Yitro, of course, in our hypothetical, it wouldn't be called Parshat Yitro. It would, might be called Shlishi, just like we have a sedra called Shmini, Vayhi Bayom HaShmini. This would be Bachodesh HaShlishi in the third month, and maybe it would be called Chodesh or Shlishi, whatever. That's not the issue for now. But I want to take that chapter, which, even on a hypothetical level, I feel guilty about having removed, and let's put it in right before the beginning of Mishpatim, and call that Parshat Yitro. Now look at how it reads. Yitro heard, he came, on the after he was treated very respectfully by Moshe and Aaron and the elders, and they feasted, and they sacrificed to God, etc., etc. The Torah tells us that on the following day, there's a dispute among commentaries as to what that means, but taking it at its simple face value, on the following day of Yitro's arrival to Moshe and his reception with full fanfare, Moshe sat down to judge the people, as he would have done already after life settled down to its routine following revelation at Sinai. And Yitro observes that he's doing all of it by himself, and that the people are lined up in long lines, and he probably overheard grumbling about the delays in asking Moshe a question, etc., etc. And Yitro makes his suggestions, and God confirms that it's a good idea, and they decide to divide the labors of judging the people and answering questions. The difficult cases will go to Moshe. This is exactly what it says in chapter 18. But we're putting it now as right before chapter 21. Then we continue, Ve'ela HaMishpatim, and these are the statutes that you shall place before the people. After that little piece of Yitro setting down the structure of the court system, so to speak, of the team captains and leaders and judges for the thousands and for the hundreds and for the fifties and for the tens, units of that size. The Torah then says, Ve'ela HaMishpatim Asher Tasim Lifnehem. These are the statutes that you shall place before them. And it continues with 53 mitzvot in Parshat Mishpatim, very detailed, mundane, down-to-earth, practical halacha, for a day-to-day basis of living a Torah way of life. Nothing is amiss at this moment. At the end of Parshat Mishpatim, we have another portion, which really, as long as we're hypothetically switching things around, which obviously is ridiculous, but as long as we're playing this game, we have, and to Moshe, God said, ascend the mountain, you and Aaron, Nadav and Avihu, and the 70 elders, and they will stand from a distance, and Moshe alone will approach. And then the Torah describes that Moshe wrote down all that Hashem said, and they got up in the morning, and there's a continuation of the description of what happened at Revelation at Sinai. Vaya'al Moshe el Hahar, Moshe ascended the mountain, the mountain was covered with a cloud, Vayishkon Kavod Hashem Al Har Sinai, God's honor, presence, glory, clothed or dwelt upon the mountain. It was covered for 6 days, and on the seventh day, Moshe was invited into the cloud, so to speak, and Moshe goes into the cloud, ascends the mount. Vayhi Moshe Bahar, Moshe was on the mount, Arba'im Yom V'Arba'im Laila, 40 days and 40 nights. Now the end of Parshat Mishpatim is in essence the continuation and maybe the conclusion in a certain way of the episodes, of the episode of what I keep calling Revelation at Sinai, including the famous Na'aseh V'Nishma, we will do and we will understand and accept, etc., etc. But it's definitely a continuation. So we're going to hypothetically remove this, put it at the end of our shortened Parshat Yitro, before we get, which we're not calling Yitro anymore, as I said, we're calling it something else. And the new Parshat Yitro takes over for Mishpatim, because it precedes Ve'elah HaMishpatim with the episode from our real beginning of Parshat Yitro, puts it there, the end of Mishpatim, which now became an unwieldy, long setter. We moved to the end of the shortened Bachodesh HaShlishi, Parsha Shlishi, and it makes it a normal size again, even though Yitro is a small Parsha relative to the others in the book of Shemot. My point, in long, drawn-out way of getting there, is that if we are talking chronologically and topically, then we've got a problem with chapter 18 and a different problem with 21, which can be solved very beautifully by moving 18 after the Aseret HaDibrot part of chapter 20, before what we call chapter 21 now. The numbers would have to be changed, of course, and the end of chapter 21 gets moved earlier. Sorry, not 21, but the bulk of 24. 24. Not the bulk, the whole of chapter 24. Everything would be fine, but that's not the way it is. So what we have to do is take all of my hypothetical and rephrase it in the form of a question. Brings to mind, of course, the host of Jeopardy, who would always say that to a contestant who just gave a correct answer to a question, except they don't have the questions, they give the answers, and you have to put that in the form of a question. What is Gerald Ford? You know, whatever. So now all of what I've just said becomes a question. How come chapter 18 is where it is, and how come chapter 24 is where it is? I believe part of the answer, it'll take much less for me to state this than building up of the question, part of the answer is that you cannot neatly separate the story of the episode of Revelation at Sinai, begin it and end it, and then begin the issue of running a Jewish society based on Torah on a day-to-day basis. You miss the point. It's got to be blended in such a way, or shuffled in such a way, that before you read about receiving the Torah, you are already put into the mode of being told this is not just going to be a flash-in-the-pan experience like the splitting of the sea for the practical purpose of getting the people across, but this is going to be the basis of a Jewish life for every Jew in perpetuity. And therefore, we are focused on the concept of day-to-day life as a Jew, even before we, so to speak, stand at the foot of Sinai to receive the Torah. Furthermore, we are to be inspired by Yitro, the individual non-Jew who comes to Judaism to become part of the Jewish nation, to convert to Judaism, because the experience of revelation at Sinai was that for all of us. All of the people of Israel underwent a mass conversion, which we could say, at Har Sinai. They went from a status of B'nai Noach, regular people of the world, with commitment to certain behaviors as the family and descendants of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, to now being B'nai Israel, the Jewish nation. And if it happened a couple of weeks before Matan Torah or at Matan Torah, that's not the point now. But that's what's happening. And therefore, the first part of the Yitro story is inspiring in that respect. When you then have the bulk of Parshat Mishpatim placed, so to speak, sandwiched between the continuing story of Ma'amad Har Sinai in the 40 days that Moshe spent there, then you get the message that the little itsy-bitsy details of Jewish life are as much a part of revelation at Sinai as I am the Lord your God who took you out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. And as much as Shabbat, and as much as thou shalt not commit murder, we have the mundane issues of Mishpatim, of what do you do when your dog went out of your backyard into your neighbor's and dug up his newly planted rose bushes and got scratched, and you had to take him to the vet, and you ran up a bill there, and the rose owner is upset that his prize roses have been uprooted by your dog. And how do you handle the claims and counterclaims of damages in such a mundane case? You compare this with belief in God and the prohibition of idolatry? The answer is yes, because Judaism is a way of life. And that message is gotten across by the positioning of, on the one hand, the Yitro episode before the Torah tells us about Matan Torah, and the bulk of the mitzvot in Mishpatim sandwiched between the beginning and end of the account of Revelation at Sinai. I hope this point got across. I've said it before, I've written about it, but there were certain ways that I've expressed it which are new to me, and I hope that they are being listened to with that fresh ear. On that note, I will wish you once again a Shabbat Shalom. Specifically, have a meaningful Shabbat Parshat Yitro. You really can say that about every Shabbat, because the intellectual and emotional contribution that the Torah's portion of the week adds to one's Shabbat should be experienced, should be felt, should be part of one's Shabbat. And Lehishtamea. And if you still stay tuned, we might have a couple of fun things to finish off this week's edition of Torah Tidbits Audio. Did I say it? Lehishtamea. Sure, you got that one, but how about this next one? Mm-hmm. if you're still listening and you got either of those old TV theme songs, drop me a note, email tta@ouisrael.org, and we'll see about some prizes being sent. In the email, include your location and your address, especially if it's out of Israel. Thank you, and I hope you enjoy the main part of the show, but also the fun part at the end. And one more time, Lehishtamea.